This is Omaha Sports Insider with Joe Quinn and Nick Handley on your radio at AM 590, online at AM590ESPNRadio.com, and on your smart speaker. Ask Alexa to open AM 590 Omaha. Now, here's Joe and Nick.
Ooh, what a leaderboard it is at Augusta right now. Three-way tie for the lead. All three guys that are tied for the lead right now have actually won major championships in the past. You got Francesco Molinari, former British Open champ, at minus seven. Jason Day, former PGA champ, also at minus seven. Brooks Koepka, who's won three of these things at this point, is also minus seven. All three of those guys are done for the day. You got just Dustin Johnson sitting there at minus six. He is also done for the day. So the guys in the top four positions right now all have won major championships. Adam Scott also in there at minus six, another former major champion at the Masters. So, man, you got a lot of guys near the top. Louis Oosthuizen is up there at minus five. Ian Poulter at minus five. And don't look now, Tiger Woods having a nice little run as of recent. He just birdied 11, which might be the first birdie of the day at 11, actually. That's one the guys typically struggle with. He is at minus four, so Tiger Woods very much in this thing. Your Phil boy. Mickelson, I feel like, also at minus four. At least he was earlier today. So if you were hoping for a class leaderboard heading into the weekend, you are going to get your wish, it would appear, if things kind of hold as they are right now. It is a lot of the big hitters, former major winners, that are at the top, which I think is good. You know, I know that there are some people who want to see, you know, the underdog, who are looking, you know, for the new guy to come in and, you know, make a run, do something spectacular. But for my money, the more class you have at the top of this thing, the better it is for the weekend. And it certainly looks like that's the way we're trending right now.
Well, the number one guy I'm rooting for would be a newbie, and that's Ricky Fowler, who most people assume is the best guy to have never won a major.
I think that he safely holds that mantle at this point. And he's, I mean, he wasn't too far out of this thing.
Yeah, he's minus three, one under for the day, through 10, excuse me. So he's still hanging around there. Now, Joe, is Francesco Molinari, is he the guy who does the weird stretches for
I don't know. I'm not totally sure. He is, I believe, the first Italian to hold a share of the lead at the Masters following any of the
rounds. Okay, maybe I'm thinking of Bernard Langer or something, but there's this one weird golfer who does all these weird stretches for you.
Well, Bernard Langer's an older guy. He's probably, well, he's on the Champions Tour now, so he's got to be 60 at least. He's won the Masters a couple of times back pre-Tiger Woods. In fact, I think he may have won in, 90? When did Bernard Langer last win the Masters? It was early mid-90s. He had won at least one of them. So I believe he's won it twice, if I'm not mistaken. But he's been on the Champions Tour. I would assume when the U.S. Senior Open rolls back into town in a few years, he would be one of the guys that would be amongst the contenders in that field. So to watch right now, actually, Tiger Woods is at 12, where guys have had quite the adventure today. If you're familiar with the Masters, so 12 is the par 3 that you have to hit it over the water, and there's the sand trap in front, there's the two sand trap behind. I mean, the landing area on 12 has got to be, 10 yards maybe total? And today, the flag is right in the middle of the green, so you can't even really shoot it at the flag, which actually, unless you're Tiger Woods, then you can, because he's within about 5 feet here on 12, so chance for maybe another birdie here at Amen Corner.
Is going to the Masters on your bucket list? Have you made an attempt to do it?
I've never made an attempt to do it. Yes, it is on my bucket list.
Then when will you attempt?
I don't know. That's a great question. Okay. I feel like people that go to the Masters, you either have to be willing to make a very significant financial commitment to do it, or you like have to have an in. You like have to know somebody that can, and you still have to make a pretty significant financial commitment, I think. But you have to know somebody who can get you tickets. I mean, I don't know that they actually sell, like, on the open market tickets to the Masters. I'm not entirely sure how it works.
So Jay Moore, who I used to do radio show with in Lincoln, he went 2 or 3 years ago. What I think they do is you put yourself in a lottery, just the kind of the average random person. Put yourself in a lottery, and if they pick your name, then you're able to go. But it's just completely at random. I think Jay got lucky. I think he said his first or second year he put his name in the lottery, he was able to go. But, I mean, there are people who've been in there, he said, for multiple years who have been in that lottery and never been selected. So it's basically just a luck of the draw, I think, for the just kind of general population.
Yeah, there are a few golf courses that I would want to visit, either for a tournament or to go and play. And I think to play Augusta, you really have to know somebody. I mean, because that's a members-only deal. It's a private course. It's not public or anything. I think for every golfer, getting a chance to play at Augusta would be that should be on your bucket list. If you have not done it, I would assume it'd be up there. St. Andrews, the old course at St. Andrews, that is also a lottery system type thing. And, you know, to play it is not, like, prohibitively expensive. I mean, it's probably, you know, a couple hundred bucks, but, I mean, really, that's, you know, if you're a golf fan, getting to play on St. Andrews for a couple hundred dollars or whatever the exchange rate works out to be, I think most people would take that opportunity. I think Michael Bruns of Husker 24/7 has played. I know he's played at St. Andrews. They have, I think, five courses there. So I'm not sure if he's played the old course or not, but I know that that's just a random lottery. You put your name in for, like, the days that you're going to be there, basically, and they just, you know, pull out so many people per day, and you get to play it. Pebble Beach, which is where the U.S. Open is this year, is one that I've always wanted to play. That's right on the water. That would be fantastic.
Torrey Pines,
another one I think would be cool to get to see. Really, any of the U.S. Open courses that they play on are pretty spectacular. Now, some of the newer ones, I'm not quite so sure. Like Chambers Bay is up in Washington, I want to say. That's a newer one on the U.S. Open rotation. Don't know a lot about it. My neighbor actually played Erin Hills up in Wisconsin not too terribly long ago. So that was really, really cool. And that was the one where the guys were griping about how thick the rough was for a while just off the fairway. Pinehurst, number two, is one that I know Golic and Wingo did a contest where you could go down and play Pinehurst with them last year. And I don't know what their golf contest is going to be this year, this time around. But that would be a fun one. Bethpage Black is a public course, I want to say, in New York, I think. New York or Pennsylvania, one of the two. That would be a cool one to play. Medina is in Chicago. They've done PGA Championships and U.S. Opens in the past, so that's a Midwestern one. Then there's the one, what's the one in St. Louis that hosted the PGA? Was it, gosh, maybe even last year? Down in the St. Louis area? That's another one. And then there's Whistling Straits up in Wisconsin, I think, too, is another one. Is it in Wisconsin or Minnesota? That would be another interesting one to play.
So you golf on the regular a little bit. I do not golf. But it's interesting to hear you say the, like, the top courses you want to play are U.S. Open courses. Now, the U.S. Open for me is my favorite major because usually that's when the professional golfers actually look human.
Yep.
And they, like, struggle, and maybe just three under will actually win the whole thing. But you don't have a problem, like, playing one of those super tough courses. Like, your final score wouldn't care.
I think when you get to some of these things, like some of these places, you just accept that you're going to be bad. But the courses that they play the U.S. Open on, I don't know this for fact, but they will grow them out to, like, U.S. Open level. I don't know that you go to, you know, Erin Hills, it's going to look the same way that it did for the U.S. Open. I'm sure they let it go and let it grow out. And the other thing, too, is I'm not going to play the tees that these guys play, right? I mean, on some of these courses they play majors on, they're so long. Like, I could hit a bomb drive from the tee box and not even make it to the fairway. Like, I would be short of even making it onto the short grass. So the distance would be more in line. I would play way up from where the PGA pros play.
Well, speaking of tees, Zach Johnson, right?
That's
what he hit today?
Yeah, okay, so if you didn't see the replay of this, he was actually one of the feature groups at Masters.com earlier, but he had one of those, like, moments that all of us hacks have had where you tee the ball up and you're sitting there taking a practice swing and you accidentally, like, tap it off the tee. So he's sitting there taking practice hacks and he knocks it off the tee and it goes about 2 yards forward or whatever, and you can actually hear him say on the broadcast, like, oh, you know, expletive, because, you know, he realized, like, oh my God, I just, you know, hit the ball. The USGA rule is that as long as it doesn't leave the tee area and the ball's teed up, that doesn't count. So he was okay, but it was kind of one of those moments, like those human moments where it's like, oh man, you never see that. You know, PGA guys do that, and you especially never see PGA guys do that, like, at a major like this at Augusta. But yeah, he had a moment where I can't even remember who he was playing with. He was playing one of the featured groups, but yeah, he lines up and he's taking some practice swings and he knocks the ball off and he's, oh no, you know, that's going to count as a stroke. But I guess if he'd been out in the fairway, it would have been a problem. But on the tee, it was no big deal. He just put it back up there like we all do, and it didn't count for anything.
Yeah, the way it came across on Twitter, I thought this actually was going to count against him as a stroke.
No.
And it was, that would have been really funny. But yeah, Cedar Rapids native, right, Joe?
Yes, Cedar Rapids native, Drake University grad.
Oh, Drake too as well.
Yeah, in fact, if you're not familiar with Zach's story, he was actually the number two golfer at Drake. He was never number one, but just decided afterwards. I don't know. That's
the number one guy not go pro?
Tremendous question. I have no clue who the number one guy was. And it's not like Drake is revered for having, like, this great golf team or anything. But after he graduated, Zach just decided he wanted to be a pro. kept working at it, You know, years on the, I guess it was the, you know, the Hooters tour at the time, and then it was, it's the web.com tour now. It used to be the Nationwide tour, I think, when he was playing on it, and kept working and working and working, and then got, when he made it onto tour, I can't think of what the first tournament that he won was, but I think he had maybe two wins before he won at Augusta. And the year that he won the Masters, it was like the weirdest Masters year ever. The wind was just relentless. And Zach shot like plus two or plus three and won the Masters that year. And that never happens. Like, the Masters is almost always a somewhere between, I don't know, five and 10 under usually ends up winning or is pretty sporty. But yeah, that year, everybody was over par. It was him. I think Trevor Immelman was in the mix that year. But it was a weird year that he ended up winning. But then a couple years later, he ended up winning, you know, the Open Championship over in England. And that one was a little bit less surprising because those tournaments, typically you don't have to be as big of a hitter. And Zach has never been a huge hitter. Like, he's 10, 15 yards short. So it was just plus one.
Yeah. I Steve Goosen, Roy Sabatini, Tiger Woods are right behind him.
Yeah. I mean, it was a very unusual year at the Masters. He ended up winning. But, you know, he's probably 285, 290 off the tee. And a lot of the guys that ended up winning these tournaments are 310, you know, 315 on some of these holes. So not quite the big hitter that it typically takes to win at the Masters. But nonetheless, he's got a green jacket. And
yeah, I forgot he won the British Open 2015.
Yes, two-time major winner, which, considering kind of how his career started, is remarkable. It's really, really a cool story. I've had a chance to meet Zach before. He's awesome guy. One of the best dudes you'll ever want to meet. All right, coming up next, going to get some hockey talk mixed in. Sean Leahy, ProHockeyTalk.com, going to join us, break down the opening round of the NHL playoffs before the hour's up. Also, check in with Scott Spritzer out in Las Vegas. All that, plenty more to come on AM 590 ESPN Omaha. All right, continuing along here, AM 590 ESPN Omaha. Certainly, if you are in tune with the pro sports world, you know it is a busy time of year. NBA playoffs getting underway tomorrow, and a couple nights ago, the NHL playoffs getting underway, the quest for Lord Stanley's Cup. Most of the series underway now. In fact, had five games on Wednesday, three games last night, four games to get to this evening. Here to break it all down with us is Sean Leahy, ProHockeyTalk.com, part of the NBC Sports family. And Sean, want to go back to Wednesday night with you, first of all. The team that you've been hot on all season in the East, the team that I think most people should look at as the favorite in the Eastern Conference, the Tampa Bay Lightning, get out to a great lead, 3-0 in their game, but look out, they take their foot off the gas a little bit. The Blue Jackets storm back, 4-3. They end up taking game one there, had some great quotes from John Tortorella in the post-game press conference. What did you make out of the Blue Jackets coming back to steal game one from the Lightning on Wednesday night?
You know, I was really impressed with Sergei Bobrovsky. Right? He has that incredibly tough first period where they gave up three goals after the first 20 minutes, and everyone's thinking, all right, well, this is going to be a quick sweep. And sure enough, over the final 40 minutes, Bobrovsky, who has had his issues in the postseason in the past, was fantastic and, you know, stood his ground as his teammates kind of chipped away at that lead. And obviously had that big third period where they were just firing pucks on net at Andrei Vasilevsky, and three of them got through, and that ended up being the difference. So tonight, you know, John Cooper said, you know, there's some pressure on his team tonight too. As great as they've been this year, you don't want to fall behind 2-0 in a series heading back to a Columbus crowd that's going to be pretty raucous on Sunday. You know, the Lightning need to take care of business tonight and even this thing up.
You know, another game that we're going to see part two of tonight, the Blues and the Jets. St. Louis, man, at one point this season, Sean, I thought they were done. I mean, I think they thought that they were done at one point this season. They steal game one from the Winnipeg Jets on Wednesday night. What do you make out of part two this evening? Is this second game will be again in Winnipeg tonight?
Yeah, I thought they were done as well. Then obviously Craig Berube's system kind of took hold, and clearly Jordan Binnington came out of nowhere and really boosted this team and helped them get to the playoffs. And Binnington continued that the other night. He was fantastic. Took a couple bumps in the crease, but you know, kind of shook those off. And the other key thing was, you know, the getting some depth scoring. David Perron, Tyler Bozak chipping in, not just relying on the Ryan O'Reillys and Vladimir Tarasenko's to really carry the offense, but a really impressive road win for the Blues. And I haven't liked this Winnipeg team for a while. They just have not looked as strong as they did last year. I mean, we've talked about Patrick Laine's scoring issues. Connor Hellebuck, who had Vezina finalist a year ago, who hasn't looked at that same level this season. So this Jets team to me is kind of an enigma at the moment, and they're running out of time to figure things out because the way the Blues have been playing since the 2000, the calendar turned to 2019, falling behind 2-0 could be a really dangerous situation for them.
Yeah, first of all, I want to stick in this series for a sec. You know, for the Jets, we all kind of looked at them last year and thought maybe, a year ahead of schedule, really maybe more impressive than what we thought they were going to be. This year, as you mentioned, kind of tailing off towards the end of the season. If they go quietly here in the first round, and we're still admittedly a ways from that, what do you feel like the offseason is going to look like for Winnipeg if they manage to flame out here in this opening series?
Well, anytime a team with high expectations goes out in the first round in almost kind of unexpected fashion, there's going to be some changes. They made the trade deadline, brought in Kevin Hayes from the Rangers. He's going to be up for a new contract. You got some other younger players who do new deals. You also have Jacob Trouba and Tyler Myers are also on the blue line. They're due for new contracts. So you figure there's going to be some sort of change by Kevin Cheveldale just to bring in some new blood and really kind of fix the issues that really kind of hampered this team this year. I mean, we say hampered, but they came close to winning the Central Division, but for as much talent as they have on that roster, and I know they're banged up in the last month with Dustin Byfuglien and Josh Morrissey being out of the lineup, but you remember this Jets team from a year ago, and most of the same faces pretty much. You kind of expect them to grow off of last year and be even better. But a number of issues kind of really hampered this team throughout the season, and so far it's spreading to the playoffs.
On the other side of this thing, Sean, with the St. Louis Blues, I mean, we know how good of a hockey town that can be when this team is really playing well. Despite the struggles, in the middle portion of this season, getting hot at the end, if they do manage to scoot by Winnipeg here in the first round, how serious should we be taking this team in kind of the bigger picture of the Western Conference?
Oh, definitely. I think the West is pretty open. I think outside of Tampa heading into this playoffs, I think both conferences were pretty open. The East, other than the Lightning, I think any team could get to the conference final, maybe challenge the Lightning if they get there. In the West, I think it's anyone's game. Between the Predators and the Jets, I kind of see them in the same light. I'm kind of disappointed with their play. That's why I see an opening for a team like the Blues where they've just been on a roll since January. Binnington hasn't faltered. He looked great the other night. And really, since Craig Berube took over from Mike Yeo in November, it took a little bit of time. But his players really turned it around and bought into his system. I mean, in November, December, there was talks about, well, they're going to trade Tarasenko, they're going to trade Alex Pietrangelo. And here we are, we're thinking of them, hey, maybe they can certainly make a run and get to the Stanley Cup final in the Western Conference. And certainly I see that being the case because, all it takes is one hot goalie, no matter how elite you are, or maybe a relative unknown or a guy in his rookie year like Binnington. A hot goalie can really take you a long way in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Talking to Sean Leahy of NBC Sports, part of ProHockeyTalk.com. Stanley Cup playoffs resuming tonight. Four games on the docket, one that we will see tonight. Penguins at Islanders. Sean, the Penguins nearly stole one in Long Island on Wednesday night. Ended up going to overtime and losing in that one. What are your kind of general thoughts on what you saw, I guess, on Wednesday in that series and just this matchup on the whole as now we get game two tonight?
I think this series, like a lot of the series in the first round, they're coin flips. The teams are so evenly matched, it's hard to really, give a decided advantage to one team. And the Islanders have the home ice advantage, so maybe you want to give them a slight edge there. But they did a great job the other night. They shut down the Sidney Crosby line. Crosby had no points, only two shots on goal. We know how dangerous he can be. But he had two shots. Jake Guentzel, no shots. So, I mean, they did a good job at shutting down most of the Penguins scoring. Obviously, Kessel and Malkin got on the board. But I think between Lehner's play and the Islanders, kind of forechecked, just really kind of smothered the Penguins and really didn't give them a lot of time and space to set up and create. And we know when you give that talented Penguins roster some time to create scoring chances, they can make you pay. And the Islanders really kind of answered the bell and really really grabbed the momentum in this series, and it's going to be another raucous crowd tonight at Nassau Coliseum. I'm sure they're already out there tailgating, getting ready for tonight. But the Penguins, I think it sounds like Jack Johnson might be back in the lineup on the blue line. Chris Letang had a really bad game. Ole Mata had a really bad game. Brian Dumoulin had a bad game. So You know, they got some decent chances, the Penguins, but I think their blue line really needs to step up because it did not look good and did a poor job of limiting the Islanders on Wednesday night.
In terms of Pittsburgh and the adjustments, I mean, the two things that I would look at if it were me, Sean, and tell me if you agree with this, perhaps telling your defenseman to play a little bit more defense and be a little bit less concerned on the offensive end, and then having that conversation with Sidney Crosby saying, look, you're a brilliant distributor, but we need you to maybe focus on trying to put the puck in the net a little bit more, just maybe a little more scoring focus for Sid the Kid here going forward?
Yeah, I mean, it was a tight game for all three periods. So sometimes when maybe the momentum is going one way, if someone like a Crosby or Malkin, you know, they try and maybe do a little too much, thinking they can kind of help the team, put the team on their back and get them out of a little brief funk. And that could have been what happened. But I agree with the blue line. The Islanders had a really easy job getting to the net and getting good opportunities right in front of Matt Murray. They need to keep the Islanders to the outside because certainly guys like Barzal, Anders Lee, Jordan Eberle, those are the top guys who are going to be able to get the chances, get them inside. So if the Penguins can kind of find a way to keep the Islanders, you know, to the perimeter and keep them away from Matt Murray's net, you know, limit the traffic in front, that's going to go a long way to help them even the series tonight.
Well, speaking of games we saw last night, we haven't touched on those yet, Sean. The Capitals take down the Hurricanes 4-2, but you also saw the Maple Leafs beat the Bruins 4-1. Bruins came in as one of the hotter teams, and then the Flames picking right up where they left off the regular season. They blanked the Avalanche 4-0. Specifically, those two Canadian teams, the Leafs and the Flames, what did you think of them in their playoff debut last night?
Well, the Leafs, I think a lot of people were maybe a little bit surprised with how the way they kind of really handled the Bruins. I think Bruce Cassidy was right. I mean, don't blame last night on Tuukka Rask. Tuukka Rask, I mean, maybe you want to blame him on that penalty shot because he even said afterwards that's the same move that Dave Pastrnak kind of does in practice, so he's seen that before. But the other three goals, I wouldn't put it on Rask. You got to give, you got to talk about the Bruins' lack of scoring and really unable to get, you know, some high danger scoring chances and really testing Freddie Anderson, kind of making his night pretty easy. And if that's the case, the Maple Leafs have the weapons that are really going to be able to overpower you if you're not, you know, countering with your own good scoring chances. And out west, you know, I think I expected the Flames to win this series, but I didn't expect Mike Smith to channel Mike Vernon. I know he was wearing that vintage Mike Vernon mask and net, but he certainly looked like the legendary Flames goalie last night. He looked fantastic, and that's the problem with Colorado. I mean, they have that great top line of Landeskog, Rantanen, and MacKinnon, but beyond that, you know, if that line shut down and not scoring your goals, there's not too much coming from behind them. So, and the Flames are so deep up front, strong defense. And if Mike Smith is going to play like that last night, we could be in for a pretty quick series.
Taking a look at the rest of the weekend, Sean, what are kind of the can't miss matchups here as we get into game twos and then, you know, game threes as the weekend rolls along?
I think obviously Blue Jackets Lightning tonight, just to see how the Lightning react and if the Blue Jackets can build off of a really strong win. And Golden Knights and Sharks, I had the Golden Knights winning this year. They haven't gone to the Stanley Cup final, but the Sharks were just the Sharks looked like the team that we kind of all expected them to be in the postseason. Martin Jones was fantastic as well. And the Golden Knights, though, they got to find ways to make life miserable for Martin Jones. You know, trafficking front screens, forcing him to look around, you know, big bodies in front. So those are two games tonight. And then tomorrow, Stars and Predators, I'm excited to see that. The Stars had a fantastic game the other night against Nashville, really kind of shutting down their top scorers and getting some scoring from, outside the top line. I mean, Matt Zuccarello, the trade deadline acquisition, scored the eventual game-winning goal. Miro Heiskanen, the stud rookie on the blue line, had a fantastic game with a goal and assist, and that's a game with Ben Bishop and Nett, who potentially could be a Vezina Trophy finalist in June, really shutting down the Predators' offense. And just like we talked about the Jets earlier, the Predators, they don't look like that world-beating team that we saw a year ago that helped them, you know, go deep in the playoffs. So They got to get things right because the Stars, I think, are a team that can certainly pick them off in the first round.
He is Sean Leahy, ProHockeyTalk.com, part of NBC Sports. Sean, to finish up, this is kind of a random one because I guess I don't know. I've never asked you this before. So when it's not hockey, not Stanley Cup, what's kind of your secondary sport du jour? Are you a basketball guy, golf guy with the Masters going on, more of a football guy? What's kind of the backup once you get past the NHL season?
Well, I'd like to say I'm a Yankees fan and a New York Giants fan. So at the moment, it's not really going so well for either team. Obviously, the Yankees are banged up. I mean, that whole team is on the injury list, and the Giants, well, you know, I was excited for about the Giants season coming up, but then they traded Odell Beckham, and now I'm not so sure. So I don't know if Saquon Barkley can catch 100 balls and run 200 times next season, do it all for Eli Manning or Josh Rosen or whatever they do. So, just once it's outside of hockey, it's those two sports and even some Premier League soccer as well.
There you go. Who's your Premier League team? I'm a big Chelsea guy. That's actually like my number one sport, which is weird for here in college football country. You would think you're college football first and foremost, but I'm a Chelsea Premier League guy, like top of my list. Who's your team?
Well, I don't have a Premier League team yet. I have a championship team. That's Leeds United, who are right now second. They're second in the championship, and they are with five games to go in a fight with Sheffield United to earn automatic promotion back to the Premier League for the first time. And it would be, I believe, it's 15 years. So it's been a long trek for me. Waiting to watch this team again on normal television, not some illegal stream on my computer.
Fair enough. Sean Leahy, ProHockeyTalk.com. Hey, man, have a great weekend. Enjoy the puck, and we'll catch up with you hopefully soon.
You got it. Talk to you soon.
There you go. Great weekend of hockey, by the way. I like how they have these series divvied up. It felt like for a while they were playing back-to-backs, and you'd have kind of an odd schedule. At least here for the first couple nights, everybody plays game one. Now they get into the game twos, and it feels like the series is not going to kind of stagger in front of each other. I agree with him. Tonight, they can't miss game, Blue Jackets and Lightning. If Tampa Bay goes down 2-0 and then they head to Columbus, ooh, watch out. That's a team that more than a few people thought would be the prohibitive Eastern Conference favorite. So that's one you got to catch tonight if you're a hockey fan. All right, it's a Friday afternoon. We are sure glad that you are with us here post-Husker Baseball on AM 590 ESPN Omaha. All right, just a quick minute before we head to Las Vegas, our weekly chat with Scott Spritzer. That was a little bit earlier on today, but with baseball going long, we'll play that conversation for you next. Nick Hanley going to join us live from State College, by the way, coming up at the top of the hour. They had a little bit of a lightning delay at the Masters, so really not a whole lot has changed in the last 30 minutes or so. The Tiger Woods group, following such things, is on 12 right now, and Tiger, opportunity here for a birdie putt, stuck it within about 10 feet of the hole, so good opportunity to perhaps push it all the way to -5, which would put him just two off the lead with still two par fives to play in his second round. At the top of the leaderboard, three-way tie between Brooks Koepka, Jason Day, Francesco Molinari, all at -7, Dustin Johnson, and Adam Scott, both in there at -6. So pretty good top of the leaderboard. Headed to Las Vegas, get you caught up on all the weekend betting action with Scott Spritzer next on AM 590.
It's time for Views from Vegas with Scott Spritzer here on AM 590 ESPN Omaha.
Well, that music means it is time to head out west to Las Vegas, get all the info we can for you on the weekend betting angles. Happy to welcome back Scott Spritzer. You can find him online, DocSports.com, also on Twitter, at Scott Wins. Scott, how is the NHL fever in Las Vegas right now? I know not a great start to that series with the San Jose Sharks for the Golden Knights, but is it the same as what it was last year, or is the novelty maybe worn off just a tad bit at this point?
Fans are just as crazy as they were last year. It's a different kind of vibe, but it's not like less of a vibe. It's a different vibe in that, the team didn't win the Pacific Division. They were a little shaky the last 2 weeks of the regular season when they sat Marc-Andre Fleury, whether it was for rest and injury, the birth of a child, or a combination of all three. They just kind of lost their mojo, so to speak, because when they first acquired Mark Stone, they won 10 of their first 11 games. And I'm telling you right now, if they would have started the playoffs then, I'm not sure that San Jose would win more than one game against Vegas. But they've kind of lost a little bit of that mojo when they played with Malcolm Subban in net for most of the last couple of weeks. It looked like they no longer had that confidence that they could attack and make a mistake on the offensive end and have it cleaned up by a goaltender, because Subban is, he's really a top-notch minor league goalie who's a backup now to Marc-Andre Fleury. So they look like they lost a little bit of the confidence. But here's the thing. They played poorly the other night. They had a couple of defensemen. Ryan Reeves looked like he disappeared. Nate Schmidt played maybe his worst game ever as a member of the Golden Knights the 2 years he's been here. And really, Mark Stone, Max Pacioretty, those guys, they played well. But it was a case where they just looked like they were a step behind. They're going to have to make up for San Jose's defensemen who can play really well on the offensive end of the ice. So guys like Nate Schmidt have to get better. Ryan Reeves has to be a little bit more of an enforcer, and they're going to have to get more physical. The one thing I tell people out here in Vegas is don't forget, last year, Vegas lost the first game against Winnipeg in the Western Conference Finals, went on to win the series. They beat San Jose 7-0 in the first game of round two, only to lose next time out to San Jose on home ice in Vegas and even up that series at 1-1. So it looks kind of shaky right now, but I wouldn't sell them short. I still think they're overall the better team with the better goaltending than the Sharks in this series.
What has the futures betting been like on the NHL playoffs, Scott? Any huge heavy favorites or big-time bets out there that you've heard of?
Tampa Bay is the huge favorite. They're the Golden State of the NHL, but, you know, obviously they come out, they put it in cruise control after going up 3-0 the other night, and what happens? They end up losing to Columbus 4-3. That's the difference between the NHL and the NBA, for example. You got a top-shelf team like Tampa Bay who wins the President's Trophy for the best record in the league. They are by far the best hockey team throughout the course of the regular season, and they can come out and they can lose just by losing a little bit of focus to the worst team in the postseason. It's not going to happen to a team like Golden State in the NBA. So the betting, as far as the overall betting, people have been betting Tampa Bay throughout the course of the season. Again, they get just huge action on Vegas throughout the course of the year. If Vegas should be a $1.50 dog, here they're a $1.25, $1.30 dog because of the overwhelming amount of tickets. So it's heavier bet than it was 3 years ago because of the Golden Knights, but it still doesn't reach NBA levels.
Well, let's get into the NBA, Scott. Their playoffs get underway tomorrow. I am going to go out there on a limb and say, of course, Golden State, the heavy favorite. But has there been a little bit of action spread around, at least in terms of the futures or even some of the individual series at this point?
Yeah, individual series, you're seeing a little bit, you know, you're seeing some action. I saw some folks taking a couple of hits at San Antonio, even though the number has moved the other way today as far as the series is concerned in their matchup with the Denver Nuggets. But I saw some people taking some San Antonio action and talked to some people who did. Oklahoma City is getting action in their series against Portland. That's gone from as low as $1.40 to as high as $1.60. Oklahoma City favored to win the series, even though they're starting out on the road. Here's one for you, by the way. If you want to parlay Milwaukee over Detroit at -4,500 or thereabouts to Golden State around -20,000 to win their series over the Clippers, $2,000 would win you $81.
Jeez.
So a $2,000 bet for those two teams to win their opening round series garners you a whopping $80. So listen, those are the two favorites, obviously. Golden State, everybody still thinks, is the team that's going to win the NBA championship. They're -200 to win the NBA title. The next closest is the Milwaukee Bucks at +550. Listen, maybe the Rockets can win two from Golden State, but you know, until the Warriors break this team up a little bit, they're just going to continue to win in the NBA playoffs. I don't see where anybody can catch them.
As the playoffs go along, Scott, what's the prop bet action like in the NBA playoffs?
It picks up. It's not very big in the opening couple of games. I mean, people are kind of just like getting into it a little bit. And again, you've got such, you know, massive mismatches. I mean, look at every game tomorrow. Denver is a 5.5-point favorite over San Antonio. That is the lowest point spread on the board. You've got Philly 7 over Brooklyn, even though Joel Embiid might not play. Toronto's a big favorite over Orlando. Golden State 12.5 over the Clippers. And on Sunday, there's only one game that's below 6.5. So because we've seen so many blowouts over the years in these early NBA playoff games, the betting on props, not quite as big as it gets once it gets into the second round. So, you know, there'll be some stuff out there on Golden State that'll draw some action on Saturday, but nothing big until the second round.
Talking to Scott Spritzer, our views from Vegas here on AM 590 ESPN Omaha. You can find Scott online, docsports.com, or on Twitter, at Scott Wins. Scott, one of the things we've been talking a lot about, the Masters, boy, the leaderboard is really, really good today. A lot of the big names at or near the top. What was the futures betting like going into the weekend on Thursday, I guess before we get to kind of where we are now?
Yeah, before Thursday, it was a whole lot of Rory McIlroy, you know, action galore. Now, there was Tiger Woods bets. You get your typical big money Tiger Woods bets. In fact, I saw one book in Vegas took an $85,000 bet on Tiger Woods when he was at 14-1, and that would pay off about $1.19 million and change if he was able to win this. But as far as the steady stream of consistent betting on one player, it was Rory McIlroy who faltered yesterday and doesn't look to be, at least last check, I haven't had it on for about 15 minutes to a half an hour, but looked like he wasn't making any kind of run. The adjusted betting going into Friday had Brooks Koepka, the favorite at 9-2, and of course Bryson DeChambeau, who played so well yesterday, was second favorite at 13-2. He's fallen off a bit, but I think people would, you know, kind of like they love to follow lefty. And Phil Mickelson's had a great tourney thus far. He was actually the third favorite on the adjusted odds going into today at 12-1. And of all the players who were getting, you know, the consistent stream of action before Thursday began, before opening day, Ricky Fowler was up there at 14-1 today in the adjusted odds. He was the fourth favorite. So that's kind of where it stood going into today. I know Francesco Molinari is leading today. When he went into the clubhouse, he was 20-1 on adjusted odds. And Tiger Woods' adjusted odds were right around 10-1. So that's kind of where we're at right now. I mean, I had four golfers. I take shots all the time. My best chance right now looks to be Ricky Fowler. I got him before the tourney at 14-1, and so his odds, so-called adjusted odds, weren't adjusted after yesterday. I would guess my best long shot right now would be Justin Thomas at 50-1 on adjusted odds. I didn't get him near that before the tourney began. I got him at 16-1. But he's having a pretty big start to Friday.
I know you like to play some of the matchups, the head-to-head stuff too, Scott, as the weekend goes along. Anything immediately on your mind for today that you already are involved with, or maybe going into the weekend, or kind of got to wait and see what happens the rest of the day?
Yeah, we got to wait and see what happens the rest of the day for Saturday's matchups. Believe it or not, I usually play 3 to 5 matchups before the tourney even begins, and not just opening day matchups, but opening day, you know, Friday through Sunday, the entire tournament. But I actually did not play a matchup. I was looking at Justin Rose, and I really thought he was going to have a better start to the tournament, and his Masters so far has not been as good as I thought it would be. Had him matched up in a couple of spots, but the problem was for me is guys like Rose were just, you know, too big of a favorite. They were like $1.50, $1.60. I generally like to come in with short favorites of $1.20 or so when it comes to betting matchups, but I will be looking at Saturday's matchups. Once today's goes final, then they'll be set.
Scott, last question for you. We are about a week away from Terrence Crawford's next fight, taking on Amir Khan out of Madison Square Garden. Last I saw Crawford, a huge favorite in this thing. I think at -1,000 the last that I saw. Has there been any real interest or discussion about this fight yet, or are we going to have to wait until we get a few days closer to this thing actually getting going?
General discussion, you know, talk around town, that kind of stuff, a few more days to go. But as far as the betting, it's been one-sided on Crawford. He's up to as high as -1,600 at the Westgate.
Yikes.
I saw at Caesars he was -1,600. So I haven't heard anybody, and I'm talking about, you know, when it's -1,600, -1,500, the public's not going to chime in unless they just want a shot at the underdog. I've heard very little movement by the public, even though they can get that big price as an underdog, and they'll chime in eventually. But as far as serious bettors, it's all been Terrence Crawford money.
I saw that somebody, going back to golf for a sec, somebody had bet Tiger Woods to not win all four majors this year. They staked like $20,000 on it or something to win, I think, like 80. Something stupid
like
that.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, that's just, you know, we all have that kind of money, right? 20,000
yeah.
to win 80. That's why I'm sure you're going to run out and bet that NBA parlay I told you about, 2,000 to win 81.
That's a lot better ways to win $81 than having to stake $20,000 on it, that's for sure. Scott, appreciate it as always. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll catch up with you next Friday.
Have a good one, man.
You bet. That's Scott Spritzer live from Las Vegas. You can find him on Twitter at ScottWins or docsports.com. Sure glad you're with us here on a Friday afternoon on AM 590 ESPN Omaha.